So we're still in Swanston Street, this time at the other end, near the river. And we have this wonderful building that represents the 1920s for us, which is a relatively well-known building for many reasons. The Nicholas Building, a speculative office building to be exact, but that has a lot of fascination that can illustrate also the popular culture that can be associated with buildings of the 1920s and of this particular period before the wars, before World War II, right?
Yeah. And this building, there's a couple of conversations about this building that are important. One is about the client and the family that built it. And then the other is a conversation about the architect. And then the third part of the conversation is about the cultural legacy of the building and its use, even at the time when it was built, and its ongoing use and what it's still used for today. So it was designed by a Melbourne architect whose name is Harry Norris. And a little bit like Percy Everett that we discussed before, Harry Norris was also incredibly eclectic. And he's another, he didn't have the government architect as an excuse because it was obviously his hand on his work. But he is renowned for lots of different buildings, and I have to say every single one you would put a different style, different architectural style on it. I suspect he was really well travelled, and I suspect he had a whole lot of favourite buildings that he picked up internationally and brought them back to Melbourne, and his next client was the lucky recipient of whatever his interest was at the time. So the Nicholas Building was completed in 1926. It was built in the time of those imposed height restrictions that we previously discussed on other buildings.
It's exactly 132 feet tall.
It is exactly 132 feet. And it actually is one of Melbourne's Chicago-style buildings. It's modelled on what was going on in Chicago, right down to the fact that it's actually a steel structure with a clad exterior. So we've seen, I think the lower floors and then it becomes something different.
Correct, yeah. I think it's quite, which is quite unusual, but the choice of steel was of course to give more area in the lowest parts of the building and more strength at the base.
Yeah, and then it becomes reinforced concrete over the top of that. So yeah, hybrid kind of steel. Exterior's terracotta, which is such an interesting, again, a bit of a local trend that was being done at the time. There's a few buildings in Melbourne that are clad in terracotta.
Yes. And a company, there was a company, Wunderlich, which was the local manufacturer of terracotta-based products. And in particular, they were known for these products that was known as Granitex. That it was a faience type of terracotta-based cladding system that did a couple of things. It protected structures from fire, but also provided a rather clean surface, easy, not so porous, so therefore easy. So they call it self-cleaning. In other words, if it rained, you know, the dust will come off. And the advantage of this technology is that it gives you a sense of a stone building. I mean, anybody walking on the street will think this is stone masonry or stone cladding, but in effect it's not. It's a lightweight terracotta system that is replicating these wonderful orders, you know, including a giant Ionic order right in the middle of the facade.
Yeah, well, in fact, this is a classical building, and we have, or neoclassical, if I could call it that, classical revival. So it has Ionic pillars on the upper facade, and then there's Doric columns in the lower facade. The developer was a very interesting Melbourne, became a philanthropist in a way, but in fact was a family who became very, very wealthy, which was as a the reason they became wealthy is Alfred Nicholas, who was the patriarch of the family, invented Aspro, which was a replacement for the aspirin that was around earlier and during the war was impossible to get. So what happened is he became a local pharmaceutical developer which still to this day makes somebody a lot of money. So they obviously did very well out of that. The Nicholas family themselves never actually occupied the building, so it was designed as a speculative building. But a lot of... He gave his architect the, you know, the brief to do a fantastic speculative building, so people would really want to occupy this building.
Absolutely. Not bad for a speculative building. These are the kind of speculative building we would like to see more,
if only we had a few more developers like this. Interestingly, Harry Norris took one of the suites in the building for himself, and he ran his architectural practice out of this building. And it's worth, for those who are visiting this, it's worth going inside and having a look. You can get into the central, it's not a private building. So there's a lot of small businesses that still occupy this building to this day. And it, it's got the most incredibly beautiful stairwell internally with a walkway, like a donut circulation about the middle of the building. So it's really worth having a look internally as well.
There's a beautiful Barrow Vault gallery as well, right? That cuts
through. There's Cathedral Arcade. So it's one of Melbourne's arcades, sits here as well, with a glass-roofed, stained glass ceiling in it. And until 1967, which doesn't sound long ago to me, but probably sounds a very long time ago to many, till 1967 there was a Coles in the basement. So the department store of Coles sat in the basement of this building. So this, again, was a mixed-use building. It had retail that was offered to the street, to the city. Then it had businesses and studios. And it was, at the time, designed to house tenants of Flinders Lane. And Flinders Lane was occupied by what we call... We have always called Flinders Lane the rag trade district. So it was occupied by milliners and fabric suppliers and... button suppliers, zip suppliers, those sorts of things. So very much involved with the clothing trade. And so the idea was that the small studios of the Nicholas Building were supplementary and complementary to the trade that was taking place in Flinders Lane itself. So apart from Harry Norris being an architect and having some creatives in the building, there was also these rag trade suppliers. And what has been terribly interesting for Melbourne about this building is it is still to this day occupied by creative industries and by small-scale suppliers, including millinery, including haberdashery, those sorts of things. They are still in this building, which is quite an extraordinary thing for a building that was built in the 1920s. Sometimes this building, does have Cathedral Arcade running through as a horizontal connection, part of Melbourne's arcade system, but it's often also called a vertical arcade because the centre of the building is so interesting and you can wind your way up the centre of the building. So it has a reputation as a vertical arcade as well. It was put on the market in 2021, so literally a couple of years ago, which has made Melbourne very upset. Melbourne's very worried about it. There's been campaigns to try to save it. Heritage Victoria have come on board and there's been some very interesting discussions about what constitutes heritage. Is it just the building? Is it just the architect or the designer that is worth thinking about? The street, the sort of contribution to the street and the city. But in fact, the discussion that's taking place about this building is the concept of cultural heritage. The quality of cultural heritage and the idea of protecting use
the
of
use.
A building.
That's right. There is a precedent in Chicago. I mean, this, as we said, this is a building that responds to the Chicago school to some extent, at least for the materials and the overall approach to commercial architecture. But there's a precedent in Chicago that, which comes to my mind right now, which is the Monadnock building, one of the earliest skyscrapers, where I've witnessed, I've been there a couple of times, and I've noticed that at the basement of the building, there's commercial activities, and the commercial activities are restricted in what kind of commercial activities they can be. And so, in other words, they have to be heritage type of activities. For example, there's a shop that sells hats or a shop that sells ties. But there can be a Starbucks, for example. Maybe there is. Maybe there's an exception for that. But the point is, like as you say, Jill, is that heritage is not just about the look and the facade of the building, but it's also very much about how the building is used. And there are examples from the rest of the world with Melbourne who borrow this idea.
That concept of safeguarding, safeguarding use, safeguarding occupation, very important. So there's always a couple of cultural stories that go with these buildings. This building, having housed so many different types of creatives, it was actually the place. There's a well-known novel called Shantaram, written by one of Australia's most wanted fugitives. And he wrote that in this building. His name was Greg Roberts, and he occupied one of these studios and wrote it here. The other interesting Melburnian story about the Nicholas Building is that in 2003, there was a stencil on the outside of the building that was accredited to Banksy, the UK graffiti artist. And there was a move to, let's protect this. And it was painted over by the city council, who thought it was just a piece
of outrage
graffiti.
Of cleaning.
Yeah, enthusiastic.
Cleaning
feet. Yeah, enthusiastic cleaning, and they got rid of it and painted over it.
And it probably affected the value of the property significantly, right? Perhaps.
It possibly did, and it certainly upset Melbourne's art community that the city maintenance department was so quick to act on this particular building and that particular artwork. It's a very, very important building in Melbourne's history.